Joshua had a baby. This is Mega Maker 2021, Episode 5. Hey everybody, welcome back. Happy Monday. Good to be in your ear holes. As you heard in the intro, Josh and his wife had a new baby. And so they're at home trying to do the things that new parents do, trying to get some sleep and adjust to the new reality of life. And I figured we should probably give them the week off. But we had a kind of fortuitous thing happen, which was Vineet Sinha organized a Twitter Spaces with me to talk about community, building community, what it takes to have a paid community that works. And we discussed a lot of my experience with MegaMaker. And I think this will be a really fascinating episode for anybody who is running a community, who wants to build a community, who wants to know about the dynamics that happen in a given market, and maybe how you should respond as a product builder. Lots of good takeaways in this episode. And Vineet and the other folks on Twitter Spaces were really great at asking questions. So let's get into it right now.
I've been Mega Maker for the last 2+ years, and I still consider it as one of the best investments that I made since in that time span.
Nice.
Yeah, so you do community well, and I have always been a fan of community, and more recently I've been wanting to enable others building communities. You're starting to get more active in terms of tooling. So yeah, I'd love to hear what's not worked with MegaMaker. What has worked? What have you learned? You've definitely known what you're doing, so I feel like that you've got experiences even before MegaMaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, MegaMaker was iterative because I started in 2013, and it was kind of like a rage project. I was working as a product manager at the time and just really sick and tired of not making progress, fast enough progress at work. And so I came home and I had this idea of, you know, between the time I got home and the time I went to bed, I was going to launch something and get paying customers. Yeah, it was like an experiment to kind of, I don't know, I just felt like, yeah, to maybe feel free or something. And so I had this idea for a while. Around this time, I knew that there were founders hanging out in campfire rooms. Like I knew Rob Walling had a little mastermind group in a campfire group. And I was like, okay, well, I want something like that. And it seems like there's demand because every time it came up a couple times in Hacker News, like folks were looking for a group of people they could hang out with, you know, they were bootstrapping or trying to build startups. And like many of us, they were doing it alone. There's nobody in their community that their local community that could identify with what they were doing. They couldn't talk to their family about it. And so I saw that there was people interested in it and that there was demand. And so, yeah, I came home from work that day, signed up for a Memberful account and made it like $10 a month. And I posted it on Twitter and I posted it on in a Hacker News thread where they were talking about like, hey, where's like a good community, private community for me to join? And that day, like within the first couple hours, I got 10 paying members and I was just like getting the payment notification emails. And then I was just emailing them back a manual invite to Campfire. And that was it. And I kept like opening up 10 more spots at a time and staying up later and later. And then I went to bed, but I forgot to turn off registration. And then when I woke up, there was like 50 people who had paid overnight and wanted access to the campfire. So it was like there was demand for it right away. And Yeah, I've probably made lots of mistakes since then, but that was how it started, was $10 a month. You join and you get access to this campfire room. And I've tried all sorts of things since then. I've tried to scale it up and add more things to it. We eventually moved to Slack and plus forums, and we've been Slack plus forums for quite a while now, probably 3 or 4 years. And again, 3 or 4 years ago, we moved from, it was like monthly first, then we moved to annually, and it was like $100 a year first, and then it was $200 a year. And then we kind of ended up with the current model, which is you pay $299 for lifetime access to MegaMaker. And that's been by far the best. I don't know if that's just unique to our situation, but I found that members just enjoyed the community way more when they just paid once up front and then they could come back to it whenever they wanted to. It didn't need to prove itself in the first month. They could just hang out, spend time, and not have this existential anxiety that, oh, I've got another payment coming out, or the annual payment's coming out and I haven't been in the community for the last 6 weeks or whatever. So yeah, a bunch of those changes I think ended up being really positive.
Yeah. And I have to say that, when I joined, I found it really nice because, like, I guess everybody that had paid a certain amount to get into the community and they were serious, you know, there's a lot of other Slack workspaces with, like, you know, tens of thousands of people, and most of them are not going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. The key insight from the beginning is that when you get people to pay, it filters out a lot of bad actors. And so, you know, over the years moderating the community, there's normal stuff. Like, you know, every once in a while I DM someone and say, hey, we don't do that here. You know, whatever you're doing, we just don't do that here. And honestly, it's never been a big deal. I can't think of ever having to kick anybody out. And we run MegaMaker with just myself, and then Helen is a moderator, and then John in Vancouver is a moderator. And it seems to work. But having people pay, and especially now, like before when it was $10 a month, people would pay and then they would, you know, not be that serious, and then they'd ask for refunds. But now in the onboarding, I try to spell it out as clearly as I can. Like, if you're not serious about this, or if you need me to do a bunch of convincing to get you to join, it's probably not for you, and that's fine. But when people have to ante up $299 at the beginning, it definitely filters out a lot of folks. And the other advantage is that it gives people time to get a sense of the community. Like, you don't need, if you're paying monthly, you want there to be value right away. Like, I gotta get something out of this right away. And, you know, that's where you get spam in the forums and in Slack, or people just not getting the tone of the community, not just chilling out and going, okay, like, this is what this community is about. Like, just get a feel for it, you know, take a couple months and hang out for a while. Yeah, so I think that's been really great. And then for anybody who can't afford $299, we've always had a scholarship program that partner with folks like Venny at Diversity in Tech, and she recommends folks to us all the time that would like a membership but can't afford it. And also, if people email me and they say, you know, I'm in Brazil and it's quite, US dollars are expensive here, can you give me a break? I do that for them as well.
Nice. So it's interesting you found this model. I think there are some communities today that are, you know, $100 a year. And then there's communities that are like $1,000 and up, you know, I guess targeting different things. I do like the I'm going to say the price point that you're talking about, serious enough people. And I feel like the quality is great. But at that price point, like, how many people are there? And like, does it pay you enough to put time into it to, I'm going to say, make sure that the community is engaged and is getting stuff out of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, let me pull up Stripe here. So I think since the beginning, total revenue is $264,000. So what is that? That's January 2013 to 2021. So 7 years, is that right? So I think that, what does that equal? I'm bad with math. 264,000 divided by seven, that's about 38,000 a year. So definitely not a full-time income for me, but definitely makes it worthwhile. It's an extra 30 to 40 grand a year. And it's been, especially when we were bootstrapping Transistor, which is my main gig now, with John Buddha, he was working full time. The thing that was paying the bills for me was Mega Maker. And without that, without the community going and without folks joining, it would have been a lot harder to bootstrap Transistor and get it off the ground. So I think, you know, people's expectations for community can be all over the place. I think you should probably not get into building a community solely for the money, but there are definitely categories and niches and types of audiences and types of communities where you can do quite well. And, you know, all the way up to like Peter Levels with Digital Nomads. And there's also, I think, a lot of professional associations that are communities, and, you know, they're paying hundreds or thousands of dollars a year to be a part of that association. There's people who are, you know, there's freelancers and consultants who are a part of directories that, you know, they pay every year to be a part of. So I think there's a lot of opportunities. And even like a Substack newsletter is a community of sorts. And you see a lot of those folks now adding Discord to the mix. You know, so now we're a Substack newsletter plus Discord. And I think there's a lot of opportunity, especially now. We're kind of like, this is where the wave feels like it's building, like it's never before. One more thing. I think also the fact that there's so many startups hiring community managers and community professionals. So they're running communities for their company, right? For their customers and vendors. And so they might not be paid communities, but they're like, you know, the company, whether it's, you know, ConvertKit, for example, has a community. They have forums and a community manager. And it just seems like there's lots happening in the space now that I didn't see 7 years ago when we started Mega Maker.
Do you think, Justin, the community manager thing, the space regarding community managers and people trying to get people involved from a corporate perspective, though, is that, being cynical and British, are they shoehorning people in to say, yeah, we've ticked that box? Or is that something that is a genuine growth driver that people at the top of the organization actually see as being valuable? Because from what I've seen, it just seems to be, oh, no, we need to do that. I mean, it's a bit like 10, 15 years ago. Oh, we need to get a social media manager. It just feels a bit that kind of like, you know, we're not taking it seriously, but we're going to tick that box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure there's, so let me balance out some of your British cynicism with some Canadian sunshine.
Please do.
Here.
Yeah, please do.
So I think that Mega Maker, this community I've been running since 2013, was my secret weapon when building and launching Transistor. Having a group of people that you've been hanging out with for years, building relationships with, engaging with, helping each other out, promoting each other and cheerleading each other when you do a launch, upvoting your thing in Product Hunt. All of these things ended up being incredibly valuable when we were building and launching Transistor, and have been incredibly valuable as we've continued to run it. I have this group of people that I trust that I can go to and say, hey, here's, you know, something we're thinking about doing, or here's a new mockup for a new feature, or we just announced this new feature on YouTube. Could somebody, can a bunch of you go and give it a thumbs up and maybe share it if you think it's worth sharing? And I think the rest of the corporate world is realizing that having community, having people who are sold on your company's mission, having people that are fans, having cheerleaders is valuable. It's kind of like this app Descript, which is Andrew Mason's new startup, does, you know, you basically can pull any audio file into it, or you can record audio, or you can even record video as well, and it transcribes it. And then you can edit your audio or your video visually. And there is this huge community of super fans for Descript. And if anything, I think they're missing an opportunity. They need a community manager to harness all of that energy and actually focus it on something, right? Like, unleash the army. Go get your super fans and get them to you know, promote the things that you want them to promote, or give you feedback on the things you want them to give feedback on. They're already engaged. They're already excited about the product, and they're already talking about it. And so often I think for companies, the key is going to be, first of all, having a product that people care about in a category that maybe lends itself to community, but then harnessing all of that energy that might be dispersed right now, you know, people making their own YouTube reviews over here and people publishing their own tutorials over here, bringing that all into one place and letting these folks interact with each other is super valuable. And the culmination of this can be, you know, Shopify's vendor program. I don't know what they call it, but you know, they have official like Shopify consultants and stuff, and you can be part of the directory, and these folks interact with each other. These folks are in the directory. They're getting work from the community. You know, it can be really a catalyst for all sorts of other economic activity too. So I think it's going to be massive. It's not going to be great for every company. Like there's a lot of companies that are bad at social media and content. There's going to be tons of companies that are bad at community, but for those that get it, it's going to be a real competitive advantage.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
You know, even Peloton, right, is considered very highly in part because of the community, and that community keeps people that have invested in the Peloton actually using the Peloton. You know, the first few months is exciting. And then they say that this is actually one of the biggest advantages of cohort-based courses. You know, your typical courses have huge drop-off rates, but if you can build accountability groups in the beginning of a cohort-based course, when, you know, halfway through your course, when drop-offs start to happen, it's your community that brings you back in.
Yeah. Yeah, it is hard to do. I don't think we should diminish the fact that it's difficult. You have to show up, and if whoever's managing the community, I think if I was checked out of MegaMaker, it would not be a very good community. It requires somebody showing up every day, asking the question of the day in Slack, having you know, routines and events and traditions. You know, we have a tradition in MegaMaker. Every time there's a Apple Live keynote, we all watch it together. So there has to be someone in there kind of doing that stuff. And it's definitely not easy, but for the right kind of person, it can be a great role. And for someone like me who just loves this kind of stuff, you know, I've always loved it. It's why I've invested so much time in it. It's a great fit as well.
It's really interesting you said that, Justin, about the rituals, because I've read and seen so many things that say once you set up your community and you invest in it, you know, after a certain amount of time, you can just let it run itself. Mm. I kind of felt that that's a bit like, well, can you really do that? I mean, unless you get a really great community that they all look after one another, mm-hmm. and you plant the seed, it's that very kind of unique, and you get it right. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of stuff about starting a community that I can see, but there's not a lot of stuff that I can see about maintaining the community. For example, things like churn or paid communities. How do you keep that going? And whether a paid mm-hmm. community is a good idea? You know, there's a lot. Mm-hmm. There's so much out there about starting a community, but there's nothing about longevity.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some of that stuff, some of those rituals you start, they do get picked up by the community members. So we have this tradition when somebody new joins, somebody shouts them out in the general channel, and we just go crazy on the emoji reactions. It's animated emojis all the way across the screen. And that's something I started that I always thought was fun, a fun way to welcome people. And, you know, I'm in the Pacific time zone. There's lots of times I go to sleep and during the night, somebody new joins and somebody has already given them the Mega Maker welcome, you know? So some of that, you know, you set those things in motion and then the members themselves sustain them. But they just like, you know, they require watering and fertilizing and care. And for me, having John and Helen come on as moderators, that was helpful because then it wasn't just me. If I'm checked out for a couple of weeks, there's other people watching the community and engaging with it and making sure that, you know, if there's anything that needs to be addressed, it can be addressed. Customer support issues, all that stuff.
Have you ever thought about increasing the list of moderators?
Yeah, I think we're about at the size that we would want maybe one more. Helen's in the UK. John is in the Pacific time zone with me. And so, yeah, I think having someone maybe on the Eastern time zone and maybe also having somebody in Australia, New Zealand, Japan would make sense. So it's probably something we'll do. So far, it's been fine. We have total since 2013. I think we have about, what is it, 800, almost 900 members. But at a time, there's only about 100 to 150 active. So people come in, come and go. You see this all the time. Like somebody will have not been around for a couple of years and then all of a sudden they'll come back. They'll be like, hey, like I'm back, you know, bootstrapping or I'm starting a new project or whatever it is. So generally it's about 100 to 150 people active at a time. And yeah, I think 3 to 5 moderators is probably a good number.
Yeah. Have you thought about like running, because the reason why I'm thinking about more moderators beyond the way that you're thinking about it is almost for, they wouldn't necessarily be called moderators, but for other kinds of programming, whether it is, I'm going to say some kind of mastermind sessions organized by Mega Maker, or it is I don't know, some kind of coaching. Like I think there's a lot of experts at different things within the group that can help each other. You know, maybe even just a day of workshops mm-hmm. Might be interesting. Have you thought about? I know you said you've tried a bunch of things. Like, have you thought about like getting help to be able to do more of these things?
Yeah. We've tried a lot of it. And multiple kind of manifestations of that. And at least what I've learned for me and for this community, simplicity is better. It's just like adding more things does not make the community better. It's very hard to sustain some of those things. Like especially putting people together in mastermind groups. I've tried different variations of it multiple times. I've hired people to do it and, you know, put people in groups and try to keep it going. It's just so difficult to do well. And the ones that have kind of sustained themselves, there's been multiple, for example, mastermind groups that have started out of Mega Maker. The ones that have sustained themselves have been the ones that have been started organically inside the group. And we also, we've done more like hands-on coaching. We had a thing called Mega Maker Plus, which was like coaching and mentorship and all sorts of things. And the what's won out is simplicity. You pay $2.99, you get access to our Slack, you get access to our forums, which is mostly archiving threads in Slack. You get access to the membership directory, and you can like search all the members and connect with them that way. And you get access forever. And so that just offering very little has been the key. We saw this as well on our Patreon when John and I were getting started with Transistor. We had this Patreon for our podcast, Build Your SaaS. So we had this little community around the podcast. And initially when we launched the Patreon, it was like, okay, we're going to have a tier where you get a bunch of extra content and a bunch of bonuses. And it turns out that all we really needed to offer was shout outs at the end of every episode. That's what people wanted. And that's basically what they just wanted to be a part of it. They wanted a shout out and that was it. So simplicity, I think in a lot of cases is better than stacking. It's like the more complex and the more weight you put on it, it's just, you end up burning yourself out because it's just too much work. It's a ton of work to do some of these like mentorship, organizing events, organizing live streams, organizing all, you know, it's just a ton of work. And the obligation that you feel as the community organizer to always show up is tricky as well. So
yeah, that's something that resonates with me as well, because I think of myself as a basking shark. I just want to lay in the sun for 90% of the time. And I spend 10% of my time looking for food. And if I can do something that allows me to do that, then that's great. And one of the ideas I have at the minute, and I floated it with a professional network that I'm working on in the UK, would be something whereby you meet up once a month. It's all online. You have an hour together. You get a group of people that are interested in one particular thing. You get them together. You split them into a group of six, say, and they come to the table every month with something along the lines of, I've got one problem I want to solve. I've got one thing that helped me this month. And you throw that together in a team of six, and then you, at the end of the session, a survey will go out saying, what did you learn from today? And you then float that to the rest of the group. And that's a learn, for me, that's a learning session and minimal effort. And the data you get from that is so valuable, or it seems to be so valuable. And I just think that that should be something that we should all try to do in like micro communities as much as possible. I don't know what the longevity of that is, or whether you need to build a product on top of that. I don't know, because it's early days for me, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I actually like what you presented there quite a bit. Another community that I run locally is Geek Beers. It's the last Thursday of every month, except for in COVID times. And that community has been so easy to maintain because there's just momentum in the simplicity of, and we've tried to add other things, you know, other events and other stuff. We did add a Slack chat, but essentially it's last Thursday of every month, people just know whether they get the email or not, whether they're subscribed to the calendar invite. It's just, they know last Thursday of every month, we're meeting at this pub and at this time, and I can just show up and be there. And once that gets in motion, it takes a while for those habits to get built. You know, the first time we did it, five people came, and then the next time there's three people, and then the next time there's six people. But the fact that it's always on the last Thursday and always at the same place and always at this time, it just makes it easier for people to show up. And to the point now where I think the last one we did, we got 20 or 30 people, you know, but it's the simplicity of the focus. This is one thing, and we just do this. This is how it works. And we're not trying to add a bunch of other stuff to it.
Yeah. And it's close to payday as well, I suppose. That helps.
That was unintentional. I think we just said, well, last Thursday of every month, why not?
Yeah, okay.
That makes a lot of sense. I've found simplicity is important, but we actually ended up doing a lot more for a community that I ran a bunch of years ago. It was, you know, it was a community of dancers, and you know, we had classes and stuff, and yeah, having like different levels of, I'm going to say, engagement and getting people to volunteer for it, it just built made the community a lot stronger. It was based in Boston, but like within a few years, we actually, like, people across the country had heard about us, which felt really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm also open even now. I think, you know, I'm open to, for Mega Maker, for example, I'm open to new ideas. I'm open to us trying things again. All that stuff is on the table. The challenge is for a lot of stuff that comes up, I've tried multiple times, and eventually, for me personally, I'm like, it just doesn't seem right for this group, you know, because sustainability is the key. You want something that gives you a good life, that adds to your life, not takes away from it. You don't want another obligation, that's overbearing. Especially if you're an indie maker, indie creator, you want this to be something you can do for 7+ years, right? Because those simple things you put in place, those simple pillars of the community, you know, like, this community is a Slack group for water cooler discussion. It's a forum for longer conversation. It's, we meet up at this one conference when it happens, and you just keep it simple. It's easier to maintain it for a long time. And I'm more on that side. I'd rather, you know, be able to manage a community for a long time than add a bunch of stuff, a bunch more obligations that I have to, you know, show up for. You know, like when we were doing weekly live streams for a while, and it was like, I got to find a guest. And then I got to show up at that time. And then, you know, I've got to edit it after, and then I've got to upload it to this spot, and I've got to remember to send out the event email. It's just been better to have it simple in our case.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's about managing energy levels, isn't it? Because I think energy is such an important, underrated, in terms of, like, you know, we look about how hard we work. We never look at outputs. I don't think we do look at outputs. We never look enough at outputs. We always look at how hard we work. Are we putting in the 40 to 60 hour week? But like, what are the outputs? Who cares? You know, but that's the most important thing in my mind.
Well, especially if it's going to be a business, or it's going to be a part of your business. Transistor now is at a stage where it's doing well. And John and I, my co-founder, in the beginning, we put in some serious hours. But eventually, once we hit scale, we really dialed down the number of hours we were working every day. And if I had to average it out, it's probably 3 or 4 hours of focused work time a day that we spend on Transistor now. And to me, that's kind of what we should be shooting for, instead of adding more and more things on our plate, you know, hoping to get to, it's like, if you look at what YouTube creators have to do these days to earn a living, it's like, they've got to do ad stuff. They've got to do sponsored videos. They've got to have a Patreon. They've got to show up for Patreon live streams. They've got to, yeah, it's just like, you're adding too much on your plate. And so, yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons I was excited about this new project I'm building with Josh Anderton, which is called Meeps, meeps.app, is that I wanted to be able to bring a bunch of this stuff together. You know, I use probably 5 or 6 apps to run MegaMaker outside of Slack. And I just wanted to bring everything into one place and have it all unified, so that a member signs up and they fill out their profile and it's instantly in the directory already. I don't have to cross-post it. They don't have to do it again. They get automatic onboarding emails right from Meeps. They get payment and registration is all right there too. It can be the one hub for everything we're doing as a community. And I think most communities are going to end up using something like Discord or Slack. That's another thing I've learned. Like, you might have forums. Like, there's the folks at dev.2 have their forum software. There's Discourse, there's Playgroup, which we use. You need a hub where people pay and register, have their member profiles. Like, member profiles in Slack and Discord suck. So where can you have all of that in one place? And I think that's kind of part of the key too, is being able to automate a bunch of stuff. The more manual stuff you have to do as a community manager, like manually adding people to a onboarding sequence or whatever it is, it's better to have all of that kind of, as much stuff as possible, automated and just running in the background. So all you have to do is show up and actually interact with the community.
Yeah, I like that. Also, like, did you imply earlier that you are thinking that the average YouTube creator or the average Substack author would want to create a community using Slack and Meeps? Like, is part of the Meeps value proposition that it'll be easier to get all that started?
Yeah, and so a bunch of use cases, and we're still trying to figure out which is going to have the most pull. But let's say you're a professional community manager for a brand, and you want to use Discord, but you want a way of having people register so you can capture their email, so you can email them, so you can send them a newsletter, and onboarding them into Discord. So you're not just sending them a Discord link with no other information, right? And so you can use Meeps for registration, payment if you wanted to, but registration and then onboarding, send a sequence of emails to show people, you know, what the community is about. We do automated links into Discord, so people get invited during the onboarding process in the app. And it's just all done in one place. And then you have the option, if you want to make it a professional directory where people can have their member profiles public in your community directory, you can turn that on. And now all of a sudden members get this additional benefit, which is, I don't know, let's say you were doing this for Sketch, the design software. If Sketch has a community and they want to, Sketch professionals want to be able to promote themselves as Sketch professionals, you could have them turn their profiles on public, and now they get this benefit of being in the official Sketch vendor directory or whatever.
I love the idea of tooling to make the life of community managers easy and more on autopilot. I guess the one of the low hanging opportunities that I haven't heard that you guys are doing, but I wonder if it's on your roadmap, is trying to get a sense of what is the community doing. Have you thought about like some kind of community analytics?
Interesting. Actually, I thought you were going to go a different way with that. Because analytics, I find are, it's just like anything else. Like I've torn out so many of, from a marketing standpoint, tracking with Transistor and really every project, I've torn out so much of the tracking and analytics. Most analytics are just not that useful. They're just not. They're not actionable. They show you things that are easy to track, but you can easily miss what's actually happening. It's like podcast analytics. We know, I mean, I look at my podcast analytics. It's roughly useful, but the real kind of sign of, is the podcast resonating, is do I get tweets, emails, DMs, comments from people who listened and were, you know, moved by an episode. That's the real metric. It's usage, it's responses, it's actual action. And so I'm not even, we have analytics in Playgroup. I hardly ever look at them. We had analytics in Discourse. I hardly ever look at them. Slack, same thing. It's just not that useful of a metric because I go into Slack and I can instantly feel, is this working right now? Is this active? What's the vibe here? Are people up? Are they down? Are people feeling stressed because of the pandemic? Are people checked out because it's Christmas vacation? I can feel all that by being active in the community. And so around that, one way that I think we can get a sense of activity is we're building this feature in Meeps that will allow people to add Tumblr style updates. Indie Hackers has this too, similar to this, to their profile. So, hey, just published a new podcast episode. Hey, I've been thinking a lot about this. Here's my thoughts. Hey, here's my latest, revenue update. And those updates become atomized units that we can then pull into the community newsletter. So you can pull in member updates from Meeps directly into the community newsletter. And then the manager has this easy way of going like, because that's like the number one question we've always had in MegaMaker is like, what are people up to? What are they working on right now? What's the latest update? And people might post those updates in Slack, but it's easy to miss them. And so this allows people to update like what they're doing. And then that becomes a unit that the community manager can easily just pull into the newsletter and create a community-driven publication. So we're pretty excited about that. Oh, good. That's nice getting that 100 there from Emmett. glad that resonated.
Yeah, it does. I'm really curious to, really looking forward to seeing it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my hypothesis is that will be a better indicator of what's going on in the community, way more than, you know, how many visitors did the community have in the last 30 days. It doesn't really matter. What matters is how many people are engaged, how many people are able to share updates, how can we share those updates amongst members and create more of these possible connections, right? Like one of the reasons I was so excited about the member directory is people always DM me inside of MegaMaker asking like, hey, I need someone who's good at Rails. Like, can you tell me who's good at Rails? And then I have to rack my brain for like, okay, who's a Rails developer in MegaMaker? But now if you go to megamaker.meeps.app, you can filter our members by Rails. Like it's all right there. And it makes it easy for, in our case, because a lot of these are public, the public to find a MegaMaker member that they might want to hire as a Rails developer, but then members can also create connections. So if you're looking for a co-founder a technical co-founder, you can search by software development and pull up everybody that's a software developer and then reach out to them individually.
Yeah, I like that.
I really like the idea of you taking, you know, ideas from the community and popping it into a newsletter, because I'm pretty sure that the future of the human race is everybody's going to have their own newsletter and we're all going to subscribe to each other's newsletters. And that will be how we exist. We don't go out. We don't eat. We don't make anything anymore. We just subscribe to newsletters and we pay for it and we pay for each other. And that's how we survive as a race.
Yes. Yeah. Let me balance out some of your UK cynicism with some Canadian sunshine, because the other viewpoint of that would be, yes, if everybody has a newsletter, it gets a lot more difficult. But MegaMaker already has an email list of almost 1,000 people, and instead of Vineet starting his own newsletter, he can just share his update in the MegaMaker community, and then I send his update out to 1,000 people. So the potential for there to be a bigger audience for your message is there. Now, instead of everybody having their own tiny little newsletter, you can have a group newsletter that goes out. And we even have this functionality in Meeps right now. You can have non-members who are subscribers. So they receive the email newsletter, even though they're not a member. They might just be interested, in our case, in indie hacking, bootstrapping, whatever. And so they would get the update. Here's, you know, what's happening with our members. And they get this big Axios-style digest instead of each of us trying to build up our own individual email list. So again, I'm hoping that that becomes a compelling reason for people to be a part of communities and to use Meeps, to have this, instead of doing it all yourself, you can harness the energy in the group, right?
Lenny does something interesting and somewhat related to what you're saying, which is that it's not the individual's updates. It's more that if some individual has shared an interesting piece of wisdom within the community, he sends that out, and he has a certain workflow internally to let them say that they didn't necessarily find it interesting, and then he rewards them with his large reach. You know, it doesn't make as much sense for MegaMaker, since it's more about people's updates internally. But if it was more of a professional organization, then it may make more sense. Like, I think what Jono is trying to do, sharing updates or sharing insights from one another out might be also interesting. And I guess where I'm going with this is, are you guys thinking about planning to support some of that with Meeps?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be agnostic in that sense. It'll depend on the leadership of the community manager. So you could say, hey, you know, what we're looking for are updates related to professional insight, professional tricks, tips. Those are the updates we're going to publish in the newsletter. And we're going to curate those. Not everybody who publishes an update is going to get a spot in the newsletter. But for those that have something that really resonates, we'll add that to the newsletter. And maybe even further down the road, if we're really, you know, thinking outside of the box, maybe there's a way of having a Slack integration where somebody has a really interesting insight or update in Slack, and then you can just go in with a bot or a slash command and say, you know, Meeps, and it automatically adds that content to the next Meeps newsletter. Or maybe there's a Meeps bot on Twitter, and you can reply to an interesting tweet with Meeps bot. And then if that person is a member, a registered member of the community, it adds that insight to the the Meeps newsletter. So thinking of ways of crowdsourcing content for a member-driven newsletter. And this goes back, I've been in email newsletters. That was my first job in tech in 2008. And we were working on stuff like this. Like how can you highlight some text in an article, bookmark it, and then it automatically gets added into your newsletter. We came up with that idea before. I mean, tons of folks have done that since, but those are the kinds of things that I'm still stewing on for Meeps. I think there's lots of opportunity there.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, very cool. I just noticed Josh just joined the space as well.
Yeah, I told him we were talking about him, so he might be cringing right now because he's like, wait a second, I'm not going to build any of that shit.
We're getting close to time. I guess one question for you, and if you have any other sort of wrapping insights, is that, you know, this is the state of the world today with tools, you know, Discord, discourse, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. If you could wave a wand, you know, as a community expert, you know, Meeps does provide the directory, but if you could do something that these tools would play better with or could make life easier for communities, like, what would you want? What would you like them to do?
I mean, I think one core insight I have is that nobody is really going to out Slack or out Discord. They are very sticky, well thought out products that people already open every day. And so we've tried other things. We've tried switching to Mighty Networks and, you know, other apps that have built-in chat. And it just doesn't stick. And one of the core insights we have with Meeps it's a hypothesis, but it's that, you know, if you're going to run a community online, in most cases, you're probably going to use Slack or Discord. It's just, that's the way it's going to be. And I don't think it's worth fighting that. Especially now with Discord, depending on how, you know, how friendly they stay. But Discord is an incredible chat platform. Like, if I could start Mega Maker again, I would do it on Discord. It's just so good. And it's easy to invite people. So it's easy to integrate it with something like Meeps. I think that part of it is worth just leaving alone. And I've noticed even like Mac Redden, who runs Comsor, which is this big community platform, they have community.club, which is a forum, but they also have a Slack. So, you know, even the folks that have been doing this for a long time that have, you know, all the platforms at their disposal, Slack and Discord are just kind of, if you're going to do community, it just makes sense to add those and not try to reinvent those, not try to get people to log into a different app or chat in the web browser. Like, just it, in most cases, I don't think it makes sense. I wish more community platforms had that in mind. Because, for example, like with Mighty Networks, it was just like Mighty Networks is a no-go for us because we're not going to have this chat-enabled community software and Slack. It'll just confuse people, right? Where are we going for live chat? And we have tried it. We tried to switch completely to, you know, Mighty Networks with chat inside the app and didn't work. People, especially in MegaMaker, they wake up every day and they open up Slack. That you can't fight that tide. So we've chosen not to.
Yeah, but is that I'm thinking of I'm thinking of starting a professional network, and probably I'd say 90% of these people wouldn't be on Slack or Discord. That would be not something they would have heard of. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like considering Circle. I found Mighty Networks to be just kind of like slightly confusing from a mm-hmm. a UI yeah. perspective. It's just like I can't navigate it. So how you know, people 20 years older than me are going to be able to navigate it? So
mm-hmm.
And so I kind of thought a circle is just like, you know, it's a bog standard, you know, forum based network where you can have like hangouts and this, that, and the other, and you kind of white label it to a degree. So my thought is, and it's not for, and it's for a specific, I would say for, it's for people in their 40s to 50s who mm-hmm. are professional in a professional network. Mm-hmm. Do you see that as being, you know, really I should just try and get them onto Discord or Slack?
No, I think there's some nuance to this. Sure. But they might all be on, unfortunately for you, they're probably all on Facebook and WhatsApp. But it makes sense to figure out what they're already using for chat. Almost every connected human being on the internet already has a place where they do chat and group chat. For some, it's Telegram. The work in progress, community, WIP.chat, they use Telegram. And, there's some folks that use WhatsApp groups. There's some folks that use Facebook groups. I think you can still, you could, depending on the community, you could do it just with Circle or Playgroup. But if there is an existing place where these folks are already chatting, it's best to just go with that momentum and use that. And the trend I've seen is that people start these forums thinking, okay, this is perfect. Like, people are only going to use the forums. And invariably, somebody starts a Telegram group and then everyone's just chatting in Telegram.
So, okay. Thanks.
Yeah, I want to add one more thing that I learned from Justin, which is to control how many places that people can chat. Like, I love the fact that you don't have too many channels in MegaMaker. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the current generation of communities have way too many places, and you just get lost in there. A lot of dead space.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, we always have to rein that in too. Like, we started this version of Mega Maker Club with, I think, 4 channels, and now we're definitely getting up there. But we also archive channels that aren't being used. And so that's one place where moderators have helped, is having folks, close
channels. So is there a golden number for channels? Is there like a golden number? Like, should you aim for no more than double digits for channels?
No, I don't think there's any rules. I think it's all based on usage. Again, don't look at the stats, don't look at the analytics, just go into the channels and see what's being used regularly. And if it's, if it's been 6 months or a year, then maybe it's time to close that down. I don't think there's any rules. And even like we could have said, like Vineet says, like it's a lot better if the community doesn't have too many channels, but we could have set this hard rule, like we're only going to have 10 and that's it. It's like, well, but then we don't give, there's a little bit of give and take here, because when new folks sign up or even old members are there and they have an interest in starting something, sometimes it's better to say, yeah, let's start that. Let's do that. Because it gives them ownership. It lets them feel like they're a part of things. So I think it's like something you have to get a feel for. So that was my conversation on Twitter Spaces about running a community. Hopefully that was interesting to you. As always, if you are running your own meetup group, if you're running your own association, if you have a Slack or Discord, if you're working for a company that has a community, Josh and I would love for you to sign up for our waiting list at meeps.app. If this episode resonated with you, if last episode resonated with you, if you find yourself listening right now and you can hear my voice and there were some takeaways for you, please reach out to us on Twitter, either at meeps.app or get me, I'm M.I. Justin or Joshua Anderton on Twitter. All those links are in the show notes. Talk to you next time.